Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may have the idea that a missionary in today's time, like in my church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, is about 75 years old as the average age, wears all white, prays, stays on her knees, and thinks about ways that she can serve and serve and serve. Well, that's part of the image and the picture. But the image and the picture that I know about with the modern African Methodist Episcopal Church leaders and those in the Women's Missionary Society is a lot broader and a lot deeper. And I'll tell you why. And what I want you to do today is to get a pencil and a piece of paper, because we're going to give you the facts and websites and information that will help you to become a more globally informed person as a result of what we're talking about and the experience that I am having live in New York across the street from the United Nations. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and welcome to Focus on Empowerment. A little bit of a delay, but we are welcoming you anyway. Thank you so much for joining us today. The wonderful thing that I like about Blog Talk Radio is that I can take this show anywhere, and that's exactly what I plan on doing with you. I want to take this show across the United States and outside of the country to help you to experience what is going on in the world and what kind of activities that you can get involved in. And today I am across the street in the Millennium Plaza Hotel up on the 35th floor overlooking the Hudson River, and it's just a beautiful sight out here, beautiful day in New York, and we're talking all things about the United Nations with the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. They are hosting their 22nd annual NGO conference, and their theme is WMS-NGO, participating in the promise, fulfilling the MDGs, and I'll tell you about what MDG stands for shortly. Definitely get your pen and pencil today. We're going to give you some statistics, some numbers to call, and some websites to visit, because we're going to take you across the landscape of what's going on with humanitarian efforts. Again, I prefaced my show with not just talking about the image of the past of someone who is up in age, who wears a particular color, who has her Bible and does a lot of praying. That is definitely a part of the Missionary Society, but it's not the only thing that the Women's Missionary Society of the AME Church is doing. They're doing some remarkable activities, involved in some remarkable work that we're going to talk about very shortly. I have pre-recorded two interviews, actually an interview that I've split in half, with the representatives of the NGO, of the WMS. They are our NGO representatives for the Women's Missionary Society, Lorraine Dickerson and also Carolyn Scavella. And they will give you more information about some of the projects that WMS has been involved in, including the Mama Kits and the Fistula campaign. You may not know what that is, but I'll tell you about that a little bit later on, because now we have heard from one of the UN representatives on the Fistula campaign that the WMS has gotten involved in. So we'll talk to you about that in just a little while. I'm excited. This is a very busy time, very exciting time to be alive, certainly in the month of October. I've gone from one conference to the other last week. I was in Washington, D.C. This week I'm in New York. I'll be in Connecticut this weekend. And then next week we're doing a big countdown for the Multicultural Conference that will start and take place on Thursday, October 28th, on the campus of the University of Massachusetts, up in the Alumni Lounge on the second floor. It is really exciting what we are doing and what we're going to be doing as a result of that particular event. There's still room left. We have registration limitation in terms of seating, but we still have some more opening slots, so we would encourage you to go to, you can go directly online to I'll give you two websites. The first one is www.mssconference.eventbrite, that's E-V-E-N-T-B-R-I-T-E.com, and you can register directly there. The registration fee is only $99, and that includes the 12-month membership for the Multicultural Conference and Symposium Series, and $25 if you're a student. So we try to give you a price break there. It's going to be a great event. Dr. Keith Motley is our opening address keynote speaker. I'll be delivering a message as a result of his role as chancellor of the University of Massachusetts. William Wells is the chair of the National Black MBA Association, and he is our closing speaker. And then we have about 20 different speakers in between. It is an amazing lineup, very diverse lineup. Anything you want to talk about regarding multiculturalism will be a part of the Multicultural Symposium Series. So if you're anywhere around Boston, if you can fly in for the day, which some people are going to be doing, this is the conference that you want to attend. It really will be a great awakening for many, many people. So we would encourage you to do that. So that's the first website. The second website for the complete conference agenda to see what the whole Multicultural Symposium Series is all about is mssconnect.com. That's www.mssconnect.com. You can go there and find out all the information about the Multicultural Conference that's coming up next Thursday. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to those who are going to be participating, and we certainly would love to have you there as well. It's a bargain for $99 in this day and time with what you're going to be getting. It's going to be a great event. Well, back here in New York, I arrived yesterday and was warmly greeted and had an opportunity to present my leadership workshop to the representatives who are here. This conference is being attended by the senior leadership in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the senior officials in the Women's Missionary Society. Mrs. Mary Ann Norris is the wife of Bishop Richard Norris in the first district of the AME Church. We have 20 districts around the world, and she is a part of the first district and is here representing the first district, all of the East Coast states, New England, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, parts of Pennsylvania, and Bermuda are a part of the first district. And Shirley Davis is the president. Dr. Shirley Hopkins Davis is the president of the Women's Missionary Society for all the missionaries across the globe. There are about 2.5 million members of the AME Church, and in that group, you have many, many missionaries, many of the women who are part of the Missionary Society. She is here as well. We also have Mrs. Jewel McEachan, who is the first Episcopal District president of the Missionary Society, and then various chapter conference branch presidents. These are the different terminologies that are used, are all part of the conference. About 50 or 60 people are here, but senior leadership are representing many people across the country, all talking about our society. I'm a part of the Missionary Society. I've been a part of the AME Church forever, and my roots go back many, many years in this church. But they are here to learn. They're also here to get firsthand information about the global activities that are taking place with our church. Now, our church started, I'll give you this little bit of history, and then I'm going to play part one of this interview. Our church started in the 1700s, in the late 1700s, and you can go to www.amec.org. I believe that's the website. I'll look it up while you're listening to the interview, where you can find out complete information about the church. But the Women's Missionary website is www.wms-amec.org, wms-amec.org. You can go there and find out all information about the Women's Missionary Society. So the society started, and the church started in the late 1700s. It was incorporated in 1816. Richard Allen is the founder of the AME Church. There were other people involved in the founding of the church, but he rose to be the leader. He rose to become our first bishop in the AME Church. They, because of our Methodist connections, had very strong abolitionist leanings, obviously. We were an African-American denomination. We grew out of the Methodist faith because of discrimination. In that time, in Philadelphia, the founders of the AME Church, including Richard Allen, walked out of St. George's Methodist Church and then ultimately started what is now the AME Church as a free movement, as a movement for first free blacks during that time, and then ultimately after the Civil War spread throughout the South. And now you have some of the strongest AME churches that are located in the South. They didn't just start there and stop there. They continued. We have churches in Canada, in parts of the Caribbean islands, in South America, in parts of Europe, also lots of churches in Africa. And now the latest churches are in India. There are 41 AME churches in India. So it is a worldwide denomination, very mainstay, very much to the in the forefront of the civil rights movement, economic development within the African-American community and other communities of color, and just a long, rich history. And parallel with that was the wife of Bishop Richard Allen, Sarah Allen, his second wife, and she was the founder of the Women's Missionary Society. Some societies that are named after her. There's a lot of homage around her and what she did way back in the early 1800s. And because of that vision that she certainly had, we now have a very viable and very strong Women's Missionary Society. Yesterday I had an opportunity to talk about leadership and about visionary leadership to the women who were there, and it was a great place for me to be and to really share my vision as an individual, as a churchwoman, as a businesswoman, but also helping the leaders to capture their own vision and how the vision of a global ministry on this order can be very well done and well executed with the right level of diligence and perseverance and definitely prayer and faith. So that is just the backdrop, and there were other presentations being made, and I'm going to give you some information about them going forward. But what I want to do right now is to play in the part one of this first interview. This will be about 9 minutes or so, and I have interviewed Lorraine Dickerson and Carolyn Scavilla. They are longtime members of our church and also the representatives for the UN as a NGO. The Women's Missionary Society is an NGO, and that stands for non-governmental organization. So organizations that are not government-funded, not started by the government, but recognized by countries and recognized by the United Nations are called NGOs. And in the case of the Women's Missionary Society, they are officially represented and recognized as an NGO, and they have a permanent representation when the General Assembly meets and all of the other meetings that take place within the UN. I belong to Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and they are also an NGO, and I've been to the UN on their behalf in the past. So it's really fun to be back here to see all the things that are going on and to always, always learn. So we're going to have you to learn a little bit, first with Lorraine and Carolyn talking about the WMS and NGO. So stay tuned. We're going to
So often we hear the word missionary and we think of little ladies way over into a distant land doing very good work. But we want to talk about a contemporary version of missionaries when it comes to the African Methodist Episcopal Church, a church that I've been a part of. I was born into the AME Church and certainly respect and admire, and I am a missionary. But we're talking about the missionaries that are having a leadership conference here in New York, where we've been here in New York since yesterday, as part of an NGO experience, and the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church is having their conference. It started yesterday, will conclude today, and the theme is WMS NGO, Participating in the Promise and Fulfilling the MDGs. And I am speaking to the representatives who represent us at the United Nations, Lorraine Dickerson and Carolyn Scavilla. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Carolyn.
Hello. I'm glad to have both of you here. And I just want to ask you, how far back do both of you go as being missionaries in the AME Church? Lorraine, you first.
Good morning once again, and thank you so very much, Carol, for this opportunity. Both Carolyn and I have been representing the Women's Missionary Society of the United Nations since 2000. Prior to our coming on board, our very first NGO representative was Mrs. Flora Eastman, who served for almost 13 years since the inception of the NGO, the Women's Missionary Society, as an NGO back in 1985. Carolyn and I have worked together in a marvelous way to bring the Women's Missionary Society from a place of receiving and disseminating information and moving towards some areas of advocacy to advocacy and action. We have worked to bring forward a number of programs, new and exciting programs to benefit our connectional districts in Africa as well as here in the United States. And so we've been working for the past 10, 11 years now.
Great. Carolyn, can you add to that in terms of your own personal experience and involvement with WMS?
Sure. I've been a missionary, a member of my local missionary society since 1974.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some wonderful experiences in the organization. I've had the privilege and pleasure of serving as a New York Conference branch president and being involved in global as well as local missions. And as Lorraine stated, in 2000, we had the privilege of being appointed by the then president, Sister Dorothy Adams Peck, to the position of NGO representative. And it has been a venture.
You know, it's quite an honor because there are thousands of nonprofit organizations in the United States alone, let alone other countries, to get to the point where you are recognized with the United Nations is quite an honor. I want to talk to you just a little bit about that. I know something about it because I'm a Delta, and Delta Sigma Theta is also a recognized NGO. And they meet at the United Nations on a yearly basis. I've been there with those meetings. So it is something that is recognized and is an important quality. What do you think, what quality or what important essence does the WMS, the Women's Missionary Society, bring by being officially recognized by the United Nations? Lorraine?
Yeah, we bring plethora of experience in the mission field. The Women's Missionary Society has been organization pretty much the social arm of the AME Church over the years, and we bring a certain consciousness about the African American experience, and we also bring our focus in the areas of women and children, human rights, peace, justice, health, education. We are not a one issue NGO. We move in different areas to promote the work of the WMS. As women, we are feel empowered and passionate about the work that we can do at UN. There is great potential there, and our goal is to motivate and galvanize our membership to be world shakers, to participate in the global experience, to make a difference in the lives of women and children. And we seek to do that every day as we fulfill our responsibilities as missionaries, primarily missionaries first, and move in that area of our representation of the AME at the UN. I've also
like
been
that,
a missionary.
I like that word, world shaker. That's a good word to coin.
Yes, yes. I believe in the global experience, and you know, we're not an island, and we touch the lives of people as we move in our circles, and we're all interconnected. This is a global experience now. So our vision is global, though we do the work locally. We are connected to our brothers and sisters throughout the United States, the Caribbean, Africa, Europe even, and most recently the work that is taking place in other parts of the world. We're not a global organization, but we are international in scope. And what we do bring to it is our passion for the potential of the Women's Missionary Society at the United Nations.
Well, certainly, you can really look at WMS as being global just because of the scope and the landscape. We now have a new conference in India, and certainly can see your work spreading to that particular country very soon. With your work as representatives at the UN, do you have to actually attend sessions? I know the General Assembly is going on now between now and December. Are you a part of the observation team with that? Tell us, what does it mean to be an official representative for the WMS as the UN meets?
Well, as you are aware, Carol, an NGO is a non-governmental organization affiliation with the United Nations. And as such, we have voice but not vote. So our attendance at meetings like the General Assembly and so forth, those that might be invited, would simply be as observers. However, on Thursdays, every Thursday, and many other days, the DPI, Department of Public Information, hosts a number of conferences and seminars that registered NGOs can attend that address the issues that the United Nations is involved in. Mm-hmm. And there we do have voice. We can put forth our concerns and our help with the solutions to propose solutions to some of the problems, and just generally network with other NGOs with similar concerns and observations. As Lorraine said, our primary focus is women and children. You know, we understand the broader scope, but anything that affects women and children, and most things do.
Right. Everything does.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that gives us a very broad scope to work through and to work with. And with that, we are very, very active attending the Thursday seminars and sessions, and they have yearly conferences, the Women's Conference, and a number of other specifically focused conferences during the year that we also attend.
So you're there quite often. You have an opportunity to go every week, every Thursday, mm-hmm. and then other times of the year. Do you find that this is a part-time job almost, or is it one where you're there so frequently they know your name? Or find yourself at the UN building?
Well, it is indeed a part-time job. However, it is a labor of love as well. Excuse me, for both Lorraine and I.
Let's see. I'm not sure if that's gone off or not. I wanted them to talk about the Mama Kit, and we just lost that audio. But let me just explain. We have another part to this this interview that we'll share with you. But several years ago, the WMS was involved in a Mama Kit, and these were kits that were distributed to women who were having babies in different parts of Africa. So often prenatal care is non-existent in some countries, and some of the tools and the hygienic equipment that's needed is not available, and so your infant mortality goes up significantly. This was the case with WMS, and what they had seen with some of the they saw what some other nonprofit organizations had done, NGOs, including the Lynx. Delta Sigma Theta also got involved in this, and so now they have distributed thousands of MAMA kits, and it's M-O-M-M-A, kits that are given to young women who are having children, who are having babies, so that they will have some sterile equipment and sterile items when their birth takes place. There's another program that we'll share with you after the second interview that we'll play. But again, I loved what Lorraine had said. She talked about the importance of advocacy and action. So often with companies and organizations, there's a whole lot of talk and there's a lot of advocacy per se, but there's not much action. What I'm impressed with what the work that is being done around the world is that the WMS is not just participating with advocacy and a lot of articulation of the issues, but they're also involved in action, including the MAMA kit that that you would have heard of. But you certainly heard an awful lot of very valuable information and the origins of these two women and how they got involved from 2000 to become the UN representatives. So often there are people who just trash the UN. They say it's not worthwhile, it's not needed, et cetera. I beg to differ. The UN is involved in some life-saving initiatives around the globe. Water is a big issue, which I'm going to talk to you about in just a few minutes. Healthcare, certainly eradicating poverty. I want to talk to you about the five millennial goals that are trying to be strived in the next 10 years, within the next 10 years. There's an awful lot of activities. And the one thing I talk about when I am speaking to audiences and working with companies and organizations is two things. Number one, if you're certainly here in the United States, you need to do two things. Number one, before you die, you need to go to Washington, D.C. and see your nation's capital, see how your country works, see what happens in government, and use that as a real teaching and an educational tool. That's the first thing. And then number two is you need to go to the United Nations so you can see the world encaptured in this building that's under construction right now, but nonetheless, the entire world comes to New York to the United Nations. If you're here in this country, it can be a very affordable trip. You can do it in the summer or the winter. The building is open year-round except for legal holidays, obviously. It takes a little bit to get into the building, as I did this morning. There's a long line. You have to go through security go through their groups that meet at the UN, their representatives, their delegates, et cetera. So there are thousands of people who have to come in the building, particularly one way if you're a visitor. So allow enough time. But once you get inside, there are lots of things that you can do. They have a tour that you can take that's, I think, pretty inexpensive, if not free. There are other ways that you can experience what goes on with the UN. I'm not sure about you actually observing unless you belong to an organization like the Lynx or Delta or WMS where you can go in and see a general session taking place. That can be arranged according to the connections that you have and the organizations you belong to. But just to go and see how this body works, there is not just one session that is a part of the UN. The UN is broken down into several different sections. And again, you can go online to un.org. That's www.un.org. And find out about how that building works and what goes on in that building. When do they have to deploy some peacekeeping troops to take care of peace efforts in different parts of the world? When do they have to go in after an earthquake and help individuals to get back on their feet? One of the biggest tragedies that is not being talked about that much, and it really should, is what's happening in Pakistan as a result of the flooding that happened several weeks ago. That flooding left probably 2,000-plus people dead, but what it did, even worse than all the people who passed away, It displaced millions of people because of bridges that are no longer in existence, homes that were swept away, folks whose lives are just changed forever. And the UN is actively involved in helping to rebuild regions of Pakistan as a result of the water damage and the flooding that, that took place. We don't hear that much about it, but it is definitely going on, and it's very, very significant and quite important. They're doing other things, too, in terms of education. UNICEF is a part of the UN efforts, and they deal heavily with children and issues around children. So, again, two places I would encourage you to go, Washington, D.C., to see what goes on in Congress, see what takes place with your representatives on Capitol Hill, and then take another quick trip over to the New York, to the United Nations building. You'll be really glad you'll do it. And I'm not just talking about school kids. I want adults my age to do that as well. Yesterday, during one of the sessions, we heard from Carl Morrell. And Carl is the co-chair of the Values Caucus of the United Nations, the MDGs in Focus. And we say they have a lot of acronyms. And MDG stands for Millennial Development Goals. And there are several goals that the UN has declared that they want to see developing countries move and advance and progress so that they will ultimately not become developing countries, but will become countries that are part of the way of life that those of us here in the United States or Canada or parts of Europe have experienced every day and just don't even take for granted. Carl said yesterday, blew my mind, that the global poverty index is at $1.25. You know what that means? Well, that means that the average poverty rate in what is classified as poverty around the world is $1.25 a day. That's the earning income of a typical family in poverty in other parts of the world. Again, if you're in the U.S. or Canada, it is not even thinkable in making that kind of wage. I mean, our the average wage now, the minimum wage in the United States is close to $8 an hour. So just think about people living elsewhere making $1.25 a day. So with that said, and with and I should also say that the United States is excluded from that index, and that's why the number drops significantly. He talked about the five millennial goals, which I'll share with you now. Again, that's why I wanted you to get paper and pencil so you can take some notes on this and share this information with others. One is eradicating extreme hunger. It's heartbreaking to think about the people, the countless people around the globe, families, just like your family or my family, who never have enough food to eat. They just are struggling to stay alive, and they spend a significant amount of their daylight hours trying to find food for themselves. Well, the MDG goals are in part trying to eradicate that. Number two is agricultural poverty. And what I heard yesterday was, again, another amazing figure, that most of the world's food production is not coming from the big agro farms that we see in the United States in Iowa or Nebraska or the big dairy farms. They're coming from small mom-and-pop farms. Some of the farms are operated by women, but basically the smaller farmers are the point of concern and the point of improvement, and so the UN goals are looking at agricultural productivity increasing and improving based on the vast number of smaller farmers who are generating food for the planet. Number two is to achieve universal primary education. Carl yesterday said that number one way that you can help somebody in different parts of the world is to educate them, because with education, you can't take that away from that person. Education will hopefully lead to economic development improvements that can feed families, feed communities, feed whole countries. It's so important to keep in mind that education is at the forefront. Number three is gender equality for the empowerment of women. And that you look at our figures in the States. I gave this figure yesterday that for every dollar that a man makes in the United States, a woman makes 77 cents in this country. That figure hasn't changed in about 10, 15 years. It was 76 cents a little while ago, and now it's 77 cents. So we have gender equity issues in this country, and they're magnified around the world. Gender equity is not a problem in some Scandinavian countries. Political gender equity in countries like Rwanda are quite strong, where about 50%, close to 50% of the women who are in a political position in Rwanda represents half the country and represents a large percentage of women. We don't even approach 50% in the United States. So that was quite interesting. And then number one, two, three, four, five, number five, the fifth goal is to maybe get this out of order, mortality, and I'll tell you about this fistula program in just a few minutes. Also, to make sure my numbers are counted right, eradicate extreme hunger, that's number one. Agricultural productivity is number two. Number three is to achieve universal primary education. Actually, number two is achieve universal primary education. The agricultural poverty goes with the hunger piece. Then number three is gender equity and to the empowerment of women. Number four is to reduce childhood mortality, just a horrible thing to think about. So many women who die in childbirth and the child dies also. It's quite heartbreaking. And then number five is to improve maternal material health, the health and well-being of people around the globe. Number six is to combat HIV/AIDS, which is still a big problem in parts of the world. Number seven is to provide environmental stability in parts of the world, including the United States. In towns like Florence, Alabama, they have a significantly higher cancer rate because of activities, probably manufacturing activities that went on in that particular part of the state. And cancer rates are much higher than the norm in that area, in Florence, Alabama. And then number eight, in terms of these MDG goals, global partnership for development. So, again, partnering with different countries so that this will be not only implemented in certain regions but around the globe. We're going to go back now and play part two of the interview for Lorraine Dickerson and Carolyn Scavella, who are the representatives for the NGO for the Women's Missionary Society of the AME Church. So stay tuned. We're going to start that up right now.
Lorraine has Lorraine is still working. I have the privilege or the pleasure of being retired, so my time is a little more my own, and Lorraine's employment does allow her much time. So I'm sure her husband in their business would say, yes, she has another part-time job.
Sometimes it appears full-time to him.
Well, you know, I can imagine.
It'll be in October just before our conference.
Right.
Yes. Just like right now, yeah.
The AME Church, you can go to a meeting every day of the week with the AME Church somewhere on the globe.
And
so I can imagine, you know, you've got your normal church responsibilities, and then, Lorraine, you're still working. And then on top of that, with the NGO responsibilities at the United Nations, that's a triple threat almost.
It is. But it is... it is exciting. I really enjoy and love the work because of the potential. There is just so much opportunity for doing good works, and it excites me, and I do it as a labor of love. It is true that I am employed, and it's juggling and carving out the time is an experience, quite an experience, but I do manage to do so because I really enjoy this work.
Clearly, you're an excellent multitasker. Both of you are, because I know, Carolyn, you may be retired, but I know you're moving on to other activities. So
no, that is true.
You're retired from one position onto another project.
Right. My husband often says that you might be retired, but you have not stopped working, and the only difference is the time is the same, but however, the finances are not.
Very different, right?
As it is. Volunteer now.
I want to talk about, before we actually talk about the actual conference that's going on, talk quickly about the 3+1, I'll call it, projects that WMS, the Women's Missionary Society, is involved in, the UNICEF project, the Mama Kits, and the Fistula campaign, and then microfinancing. So could you just walk us through those projects so that our audience can get a better sense of the international perspective of, it's not just about saying amen and going to church and pass the plate and let's have some chicken dinners. I mean, we're really talking about real global work that's taking place within WMS. So talk to us about those projects.
I think I'll just open it, Carol, by simply saying that prior to Lorraine and I taking the reins of the NGO, we had been in a position of advocacy. We had brought back to the body the concerns of the United Nations and the effects that war and poverty and all of those things have on the districts that the AME Church represents. And when Lorraine and I took the reins, we really felt that we needed to move from advocacy to action. So in that process, we looked at some of the issues that were set forth at some of the seminars and things that we attended. And one of those issues was the birth mortality in Africa, that women were not carrying full term because of a lack of prenatal care, that at birth they were unsterile deliveries that caused the death of the infants and the mothers, passing on of HIV/AIDS from mother to child. And we looked at the Lynx had a program called the Mama Kit. And what that was a sterile birth kit that consisted of several pieces of plastic sheeting, razor blades, string for the cutting of the
umbilical cord,
right. And a full series of things that would provide a helpful sterile birth, and we saw that as an opportunity to be involved, and we brought back the program to the body, to the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and presented that program to them. And nationally and internationally, we simply asked for $5. That was the cost of the kit. And we selected Mozambique as the country because of the cooperation of health, the Ministry of Health and others in the country. And it was an extremely successful project and program. The ladies of the Missionary Society, as well as other organizations. I know that from the local deltas we did receive some funds, and
right.
from other sororities and
while.
Organizations, right, from other sororities and organizations who saw the need for that. We were able to raise funds and indeed took a trip to Mozambique for the signing of a memorandum of understanding, and meet with the NGO in country that would be responsible for the formulation of the kits, the making of the kits, and well as meet with the Department of Health there and any number and the World Health Organization. We were able to institute that program. It was not meant to be an ongoing and forever, but a kind of leg up to show what could be done. And thank God we were able to do that.
And talk to us about the fistula campaign, too.
Lorraine, you take that?
Sure. The fistula campaign is a global campaign spearheaded by the United Nations Population Fund. And the objective is to provide relief from obstetric fistula. Women around the world suffer from this condition, which causes them to be ostracized from their communities. And they are rendered incontinent for the rest of their lives if they're not blessed with the opportunity to reverse the fistula, which can be done.
Can you quickly just explain to some of our audience, and they're saying, fistula, what is that? Can you just tell us what that is or what,
sure.
what the process is?
Yes. A fistula happens during protracted labor. Throughout Africa and Asia, women who don't have access to prenatal care at the time of birth most times go through long, drawn out, an intensive labor. And because of that, eventually as they give birth, there is a tear. And it can happen in the urinary tract or anywhere in the birth canal. Sometimes the birth is still, and women are then left with this condition, which indeed renders them incontinent for the rest of their lives. They are unable to provide for themselves because, like I said, they're ostracized in the community. They're abandoned by their families, husbands, and they're left primarily to care for themselves with the help of generous women within their community who understand their plight and reach out to them daily with meager meals and or attention. So these women suffer this condition, and over time it presents other conditions because of the way that they are constantly bent over. They become actually contracted and can't actually stand sometimes. And so the condition and the campaign was presented to us several years ago. And we revisited about 2 years ago because we understood that there was a concerted effort, a global effort to eradicate the condition. Here in the United States, I think the very last time there was any issue of fistula was back in the 1920s. And as an aside, the Waldorf Astoria Hotel here in New York was the very first fistula hospital in the United States. But in any event, we embraced the campaign and sat down with the United Nations Population Fund to try to devise a way, negotiate a way to be able to provide services within our communities, the AME districts in Africa. And so through research, they were able to come back to us and identify the countries of Ghana in the 14th Episcopal District and Malawi in the 20th Episcopal District.
So Ghana and Malawi are involved in this campaign. Those are the countries and the districts that you have targeted for eradicating this horrible condition.
And to give you a little bit more information, we have now ended those interviews with both Lorraine and Carol, and I thank both of them for taking time out of their busy schedule to pre-record that interview. You can find out more about the Fistula campaign by going to End Fistula. I'll spell that for you. That's the word end, and then F-I-S, T as in Tom, U-L-A.org. EndFistula, www.missionaryfortheoffendedorg and find out how your organization, you as an individual, can get involved in this. A couple of stats on that. We heard this morning, we had a breakfast meeting this morning. Right now the group is touring the UN, and then after my broadcast, I'll go back to their luncheon that's taking place where they're going to pay tribute to the former president of the WMS, Dr. Jemisina Evans, who recently stepped down for health reasons, but she was the head of the Women's Missionary Society. But earlier today, we heard from Jillian Slinger, who is the global coordinator for the Fistula campaign. She is also a former midwife from the UK and gave us these numbers. In Ghana alone, 20 years ago in 1990, the mortality rate, infant mortality, or at least the mortality rate for women with this disease, was 630 for every 100,000 live births, and that's way too many for anybody's book. Now they've cut the number almost in half to 350 to every 100,000 live births, in large part because of this advocacy toward ending fistula. What happens, again, you can go to the website and find out all the details, but when women have this protracted labor, and I think about my own daughter, my granddaughter, who was in labor for quite a long time, and as a result, she had to have an emergency cesarean section. That's typically how we handle this in our part of the world. But if you are in a village in Ghana, there's not a hospital nearby, and if you're being seen by a midwife or the village woman in the community, she's doing the best she can. And one thing leads to another. The labor gets longer and longer. In over 90% of the cases, as I heard today, the babies die. Then they have to figure out a way to get that baby out of the mother. And if it's not successful, the woman can die. Or if she does survive, her body is pretty much attacked. Even paralysis will set in her legs. They call that the drop foot syndrome that I just learned about today. So all kind of complications that just permanently make it difficult for women to function normally. They are left incontinent, which means they can't go to the restroom. They have to have a bag, if they're lucky enough to have a bag. And just, again, complications on top of complications, whereas for $300, a repair operation could be done to repair the damage that had been done during this prolonged labor. So, again, you can go to endfistula.org, endfistula.org, and find out how you can get involved, or certainly educate yourself to the sadness that goes on with many women who unfortunately contract this disease, and this this condition, should I say, physical condition, because of the prolonged labor and unfortunately lots of death that takes place after that. Back into yesterday, we heard from, who should I talk about first, June Zeitlin, who is the director of the convention. This is a long one, Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. And this is an educational project and leadership conference of civil rights. And June is the head of that organization, the director of that organization. It's called CEDAW. CEDAW, it's a human rights campaign. In large part focusing on the United States, and this is the thing that's a kicker. Out of all the countries in the world to date, 186 countries out of 193 countries have ratified CEDAW, and this is a policy and an announcement, an enactment that is trying to an international agreement that affirms principles of fundamental human rights and equality for women around the world. Just a simple agreement that countries have, 186 countries have agreed on. 7 countries have not agreed on it. And sadly, one of those countries is the United States of America. Well, you wonder, why has the United States signed on to a no-brainer? This is a no-brainer in terms of equality and justice and ending discrimination against all women. Well, it's political. And what was told to us yesterday was that there has been an attempt to have a bipartisan agreement, unified agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans, that will then be entered into Congress, and then the agreement would be signed by the United States. And what CEDAW has said is that ratifying the CEDAW Treaty would continue America's proud bipartisan tradition of promoting and protecting human rights. Ratification requires 67 senators to stand together for women and has no additional financial cost. Something that is so simple has led to lots of difficulty and has not been done. So I'm going to give you a website that you can go to where you can get one of their postcards and sign and make your senator aware that you want to see this agreement signed by all countries, including the United States. Senator John Kerry is the head of the Foreign Relations Committee for Congress. He's my senator, and he needs to hear, and I've already signed my postcard. I did that yesterday, but he and the other committee members and along with the other senators need to hear from this. So you can go to www.cedaw, that's C-E, D as in David, A as in against, W as in women, 2010.org. I'll repeat that. www.cedaw2010.org. You can find out all about this particular activity, how you can be a proactive person to get our senators up and in agreement to sign this agreement on behalf of the United States, and all the other particulars, just lots of unfortunate realities that lots of people around the world, women, have to deal with in terms of education, violence, human trafficking is on that list, marriage and family relations and political participation. All of that is a part of this whole agreement, so I would encourage you to do that. And then lastly, I told you I was going to give you a lot of information today. We heard from David Weaver, and David Weaver is the senior advisor to the executive director and NGO representative. Again, we're talking about these non-governmental organizations for Church World Service. And there are many denominations in the United States and elsewhere who are a part of Church World Service. And one of the things that they are working on is clean water. We don't have a clue in the United States, Canada, parts of Europe, Australia, et cetera, how important water is in this country. And we heard stats yesterday about the importance of water and how it needs to be cleaned up and made clean so that parts of the world will be able to experience clean water. We can just see the situation right now in Haiti because of the people who are still living in refugee areas in Haiti because of the earthquake. And now a cholera epidemic just broke out in Haiti. It is directly related to water that is not clean. So Church World Service, I'm sure, is on the ground in Haiti, as they are in different parts of the world. I would encourage you to find out more about the work that they are doing. The contact information, again, is www.churchworldservice.org, churchworldservice.org. And there are a couple of points that they make about how everyone can have access to safe, affordable water, including learn more about them. You can contact your elected officials and join Church World Service's Speak Out campaign. They have a Speak Out campaign and receive legislative alerts. You can consider and celebrate the importance of water by using CWS's educational and worship service, worship resources on water. You can, again, go to their website and find out more about that. You can contribute to the work of Church World Service. You can call the regional offices. Toll-free number is 888-297-2767. You can conserve water by repairing all leaky fixtures and by turning off the water in sinks, baths, and showers when you're not using them. So you can become a conservationist, and you can campaign with others to advocate for the implementation of the UN's Millennium Development Goals, which we've talked about, that include reducing the, by half the number of people without clean water and adequate sanitation by the year 2015. Well, this hopefully has been not only an inspiration to you, but an informational show that will help you to understand how important these topics and themes are to people around the globe. We here in the developed countries have a responsibility to help those in the developing countries. It's all about advocacy and action, and I hope that you will get busy, go to the websites, check it out, and we'll talk more about these issues and others next week. Have a great, great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.